let's contemplate our motivation. We have this precious human life with all the good conditions necessary to practice the Dharma. But how do we use it? How do we spend our time? How much time is actually spent trying to work with our mind and generate, cultivate our positive qualities? And how much time do we simply live on automatic, following whatever thought comes into our mind, which usually has to do with our own happiness now? So we learn about karma and we say we believe in it, but to what extent have we been able to slow our lives down enough so that we become conscientious about the kind of karma that we create? Living on automatic leads to dying on automatic, leads to taking rebirth on automatic. So we have a choice on whether we want to live on automatic or whether we really want to live. Meaning really want to live consciously, with awareness, with mindfulness. One of the thoughts that we may want to consciously cultivate, if we choose to live with consciousness or conscientiously, is the wish to make our life and our lives lives of service to other living beings. Why? Because they're just like us in wanting to be happy and not wanting to suffer. And also because all of our happiness completely depends on the kindness of others. Now when we feel these two things deeply, and when we're aware of others' cyclic existence and how they're trapped in it, then it's as if there's no choice and compassion arises. And we want to be able to remedy their situation. And since we can't help others until we've helped ourselves, one drowning person can't save another one, then we have to liberate ourselves from cyclic existence and attain Buddhahood for the benefit of all beings. So generate that motivation. So we were in the fourth verse, we did, by contemplating the freedoms and fortunes so difficult to find in the fleeting nature of your life, reverse the clinging to this life. Okay, so that means exactly that, reverse the clinging to this life. In another way of saying it, it means give up the eight worldly concerns. Okay, the eight worldly concerns come in four pairs. One side of the pair is a clinging, and the other side of the pair is a pushing away. So one is being attached to, clinging to material wealth and possessions, and being adverse to not having them or not getting them. The second is being attached to sweet words and approval, praise, and having aversion to blame and disapproval, criticism. The third pair is being attached to having a good image and a good reputation, and then aversion to having a bad image, bad reputation. And fourth is attachment to sense pleasures, beautiful sights, sounds, smells, tastes, and tactile objects, and aversion to unpleasant sensory experiences. Does that sound like how you spend most of your time? Story of my life. Eight worldly dharmas. Okay, eight worldly concerns. Remember yesterday I was saying that the demarcation line between dharma practice and worldly practice was whether or not there was attachment to the happiness of this life? Well, that's it, you know, because these eight worldly concerns were so incredibly attached to them. Yeah, they just kind of run our life, don't they? Morning to night, running, chasing after one pleasure, running away from some pain, chasing towards another pleasure, you know, fleeing from another unpleasant circumstance. So on and on and on the life goes, and there's no real transformation in the heart, but instead there's a whole lot of stress. Isn't there? I heard somebody once use the expression struggling for happiness. Struggling for pleasure. That's kind of the American lifestyle, isn't it? You know, we struggle to eke out as much pleasure and happiness from everything, and in the meantime get tremendously stressed about the whole thing. I'm very fearful and anxious because the happiness we have might go away and the happiness we want may not come. And then we just spin in this worry. Yeah. And it's all, you know, completely centered around the thought of me, isn't it? And we don't get stressed about if somebody in India is going to be happy or have suffering. We don't get stressed about if somebody, you know, in Canada is going to be happy or not suffer. We revolve around ourselves, don't we? So this self-centered thought is a big troublemaker. Yeah. A number one public enemy. They should have it in all the post office. You know, on the wanted thing in the post office? Yeah? Wanted, self-centered thought. Biggest criminal in the country. Destroyer of the happiness of all beings. Terrorist supreme. True or not true? True. Okay. Worse than Al Qaeda. Worse than Saddam Hussein. Worse than. You know, but it is. It's the destroyer of happiness. Yeah, nobody outside. Nobody outside sends us to the lower realms. No, it's the self-centered thought. Yeah. And especially when it manifests as attachment to the happiness of this life. That's what creates the stress now and creates the karma for lower rebirth later and prevents us from attaining our spiritual aspirations. Okay, so how do we remedy this attachment to the happiness of this life? By contemplating the freedom and fortune so difficult to find and the fleeting nature of your life. So we have a precious life, human life, but it's not going to last long. We always feel like it is. Death is something that happens to other people. We might allow that it might happen to us, but later. But we never really know when we're going to die. Each retreat I do, I make a list of the people that I've known who have died, and each retreat it's longer. And from one year to the next, one retreat to the next, none of those people who died thought they were going to. Because we all think we're going to live forever, if possible. And yet death just comes like that. I was asked to speak at a memorial service a couple of months ago. One woman in Coeur d'Alene who had been coming to the Dharma group, and her son had come up to the Abbey one day. Actually, both sons had come. But this was her younger son. He had just finished high school. He was 18. And the family had friends in Jamaica. So they sent him to Jamaica to celebrate his graduation. And he was staying at the hotel of some family friends, and he didn't come down for lunch one day. And they checked the door. It was locked. They had to use the master key to get in. And there he was, lying on the bed in his swimming trunks, his hand behind his head, his other hand holding the cell phone. Dead. They don't know why. Okay? So, you know, we don't know what we're going to die of or when we're going to die or what we're going to be in the middle of doing when it happens. So we need to be able to be ready to die at any time. So it's good to think about a little bit in your meditation. What does it mean to be ready to die? Now, what would you need to feel like you were ready to die? Mm-hmm. by repeatedly contemplating the infallible effects of karma and the miseries of cyclic existence, reverse the clinging to this, to future lives. Okay? So we want to not only stop clinging to the happiness of this life, but also the happiness of future lives. And we do that by reflecting on karma. Now often, you know, observing karma is what brings the happiness of future lives. But when we see how up and down and up and down we go because of karma, then it can also help us reverse the clinging to future lives. And certainly, when we understand the disadvantages of cyclic existence, that helps as well. Okay, so there's some general characteristics of cyclic existence. One is that it's uncertain. Everything is uncertain. Look at our life and make examples of it. Second is that things are unsatisfactory. Look at your life. Look at everything you thought was success that you did, and has it brought you ultimate satisfaction? Third is we get born again and again. And fourth is we die again and again. We don't like doing things again and again. It's boring. Yeah, we should feel that way about life and death and cyclic existence. Then also, there's no stability in our status. Yeah, one time we're famous, one time we're infamous. One time we're rich, one time we're poor. One time we have a good rebirth, one time we have a bad rebirth. Okay. And then sixth is, we go through cyclic existence, birth, death, and misery alone. Nobody else can take it from us. So when we contemplate these disadvantages of cyclic existence, then we really want to get out. When we don't contemplate them, because it's, you know, it's not so jazzy to contemplate the disadvantages of cyclic existence. It's much jazzier to contemplate some high practice. But when we don't contemplate the disadvantages of cyclic existence, then cyclic existence seems like a pleasure grove. Yeah? And we just want to frolic and dance and laugh, and as a result we continue to go round and around in it. Okay, so developing this determination to be free, Jay Rinpoche says, by contemplating in this way, do not generate even for an instant the wish for the pleasures of cyclic existence. Okay, so even for an instant. Why? Because if you have one instant, you're a goner. Yeah, it's like AA, you know? If you're going to get off, you don't take even a drop. Because if you take one drop, and there's the second drop and the third drop. Okay? So even an instant of pleasure of cyclic existence, and our, since we are samsaraholics, you know, we just keep imbibing samsara. Okay, so it really takes a lot of, you know, I mean, getting off drugs and alcohol takes some energy. You know, getting out of samsara takes some energy too. Now, the people who are not substance abuseaholics, you know, you might be shopping. Aholics, or sexaholics, or TV-aholics, or internet-aholics, or fidgeting-aholics, or running around driving your car doing nothing-aholics. Okay, but think about it. Okay, so this attitude of the determination to be from to be free from cyclic existence, what's commonly called renunciation, what it really means is having compassion for ourselves. Okay. Like I was saying yesterday, we hear the word renunciation and we think, ugh, suffering. I don't want to renounce. Yeah. But actually, when we see the predicament we're in and we want to give it up and we want to give up the causes of the predicament, then we really truly care about ourselves. Yeah, we really truly want to be happy and be free of suffering. So I think that that's a good thing to think about sometimes when we're dealing with our various difficult habits. Yeah, because we all have certain bad habits that we do again and again and again. And to really think, you know, I respect myself, I care about myself. This habit is not caring about me. Yeah. I need to let it go. And so that is the meaning of really taking care of ourselves. It's not like all the psychobabble of, oh, love yourself and go out and buy yourself a present. Yeah. Waste more of the earth's resources and buy something that you don't really need, trying to fill up the hole inside and you'll be happy. The message we get from the media, isn't it? Okay, that's not taking care of ourselves. That's destroying ourselves. Okay, if we really care about ourselves, we'll work on some of these mental emotional habits that keep us stuck in difficulties. So when you have day and night unceasingly the mind aspiring for liberation, you have generated the determination to be free. So that's the definition of generating the determination to be free. When you have day and night unceasingly the mind aspiring for liberation. That is no small spiritual realization. Yeah. But when you have that, boy, you know, then there's got to be like incredible energy behind your practice. You know, an incredible focus. And then people criticize you, people praise you, they love you, they hate you. You don't care. You know, because you know you're real clear about what the meaning of your life is and what you're going to do. Yeah, stock market goes up, stock market goes down. Somebody takes advantage of you, somebody doesn't take advantage of you, somebody scratches your heart. Car, they don't scratch your car. You don't care. Wouldn't it be nice not to care about all that stuff? Yeah. Why? Because you care about something that's more important. Yeah, and getting out of the whole trip altogether. So instead of trying to decorate our prison cell and make our prison cell prettier, we now aspire to get out of prison. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, why go to all the headache of decorating your prison cell? What are you going to put on it, you know? Like, remember the crepe paper? You know, here you have your prison cell, you put crepe paper around it, and you put a Christmas tree in it with Christmas decorations and all the tinsel. You know, and you put light, you know, like little light bulbs all around, and pretty pictures on the wall, and nice scents in it, and soft bed, and, you know, it's still a prison cell no matter what we do, isn't it? So why try to tweak samsara? Let's get out. Okay, so that's the first principle of the path. Okay, and you know, if we can even make just a teeny bit of headway on that one, our Dharma practice really takes on a lot of energy.
Can I ask a when we get to a place that we just don't, things don't bother us, that we don't care, so to speak, how does opinion fit in there? So when somebody asks you, do you want this or that? And you have.
Okay. So how does opinion figure in if you renounce? There's different kinds of opinions. Okay, we have to learn to think clearly and make wise decisions. Having renunciation helps us think clearly and make wise decisions. You're not waffling all the time. You know very clearly what's worthwhile and very clearly what isn't worthwhile. Okay, so you're not a pushover. You're not just waffling. Okay, but there's a whole other category of opinions. What's your favorite color? What do you want to eat tonight? How do you want to decorate your room? What kind of tile do you want in the bathroom? What kind of color do you want to paint the walls? Is this shade right or does it need to be a little bit darker? What color should your new car be? What kind of equipment do you want in your new car? You know, we can proliferate on opinions like this ad nauseum, can't we? Because we don't really know what we want. Well, let's see, should I get a CD player in my car, or an MP3 player in my car, or maybe a radio, or maybe, no, they'll steal it all. You know, I mean, we go completely nutty with all these opinions. Okay? So some of these opinions, I mean, who cares what color your car is? Yeah, who cares, you know, if the paint is exactly the shade that you want it? You're going to say, I do! Well, then, okay. Yeah? But, you know, there's a lot of things that, you know, our whole education system teaches us to have opinions, and I think that sometimes it's to our detriment, because we can't just let things be. We feel like we have to have an opinion about everything. Yeah? And that kind of drives us crazy sometimes. Now, it's like we can't just look at what the neighbors are doing. We have to judge them. Okay? So, you know, a lot of these opinions, doesn't matter. I mean, I go to a restaurant, I can't figure out what I want to eat. And frankly, I'm not interested in spending a half an hour like the people around me in trying to decide what I'm going to eat and in talking about what are you going to have and what's in this one. And, you know, I watch people at a restaurant. It's fascinating. Watch people order at a restaurant. Watch how long it takes them to decide what to eat. Does this have bell peppers or not? Are the bell peppers red or green? Is it really spicy or just moderately spicy? Do you cook your rice with saffron or not? Is it brown rice? Is it long grain rice or short grain rice? On and on and on. What are you going to have, dear? Oh, if you're going to have that, you had that last year. I'm thinking I'm going to have this one. Do you want to split it with me? Maybe we should get a third one. How about an appetizer? What do you want to dream? You know, it like it goes on for a half an hour, and the longer the people have known each other, the longer the conversation about what they're going to order is. You know? Yeah, the more fond you are of somebody, the longer you discuss what you're going to order. Boring. Okay? I mean, I've lived in community settings so long. You go to lunch, there's the food, and like the slogan says, there's two choices, take it or leave it. So you take it, and you are content and grateful to all mother sentient beings for giving you food, and it's so easy. Yeah? So a lot of the things that, you know, our opinions, I think, are really useless. I mean, you should see me at the Abbey. Oh, God, well, you know, last year when we were trying to decide what color to paint the meditation hall. You know, I mean, I'm just a disaster with this kind of thing. Yeah, so luckily others have and they have good taste. Trijan, you want to make the color what? Okay, we'll do it your way. I know already my taste isn't so good. You know, but really, yeah. I mean, do we need to have an opinion on every single thing we read in the newspaper? Do we need to have an opinion about what every single colleague is doing, how everybody's raising their kids, how everybody's not raising their kids? Okay. And we're just chock-a-block full of opinions. Why do you wear your hair like that? You parted on this side. Why don't you part it on that side? Who cares? Okay. Or, you know, when you go to the optometrist and you're trying to decide. Yeah? What kind of glasses to get? You know? Oh, do I look pretty mean? Some of these frames, I want them this one.
I thought you were
more
about me too. Is this one better
or
that one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Is this one better or that one?
Okay. Oh, I'm not the only person who gets this one?
Yeah.
I often...
This one here?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Okay. We done with opinions? Yeah. Okay. You know, it's very interesting when you meet some of the great lamas. The lamas know very clearly what they want. You know, we think, oh, you have renunciation, then you just vacillate. No, you know, on important things, you know very clearly what you want. Yeah.